shuffles sleepily down the hall. He's wearing loose pajamas, and the strand of hair he combs over his bald spot stands straight up. He leans against the sink, holding on to it a little, and obediently opens his mouth when my mother says, "Try this." Later, when he told this story, he attempted to convey the awfulness of what she had given him. The first time he said that it tasted like cat toes and rotted barley, but over the years the description got better. 2 years later it had turned into pig's snouts and mud, and 5 years later he had refined the flavor into a mixture of antique anchovies and moldy chocolate. Whatever it tasted like, he said it was the worst thing he had ever had in his mouth, so terrible that it was impossible to swallow. So terrible that he leaned over, spit it into the sink, and then grabbed the coffee pot, put the spat into his mouth, and tried to eradicate the flavor. My mother stood there, watching all this. When my father finally put the coffee pot down, she smiled. "Mm-hmm. Just as I thought. Spoiled." And then she threw the mess into the garbage can and sat down to drink her orange juice. For the longest time, I thought I had made this story up, but my brother insists that my father told it often and with a certain amount of pride. As far as I know, my mother was never embarrassed by the telling, never even knew that she should have been. It was just the way she was, which was taste blind and unafraid of rot. "Oh, it's just a little mold," I can remember her saying on the many occasions she scraped the fuzzy blue stuff off of some concoction before serving what was left for dinner. She had an iron stomach and was incapable of understanding that others did not. This taught me many things. The first was that food could be dangerous, especially to those who loved it. I took this very seriously. My parents entertained a great deal, and before I was 10, I had appointed myself guardian of the guests. My mission was to keep Mom from killing anybody who came to dinner. Her friends seemed surprisingly unaware that they took their lives in their hands each time they ate with us. They chalked their ailments up to the weather, the flu, or one of my mother's more unusual dishes. "No more sea urchins for me," I imagine Bert Langner saying to his wife Ruth after a dinner at our house. "They just don't agree with me." Little did he know that it was not the sea urchins that had made him ill, but that bargain beef my mother had found so irresistible. "I can make a meal out of anything," Mom told her friends proudly. She liked to brag about everything stew, a dish invented while she was concocting a casserole out of a 2-week-old turkey carcass. The very fact that my mother confessed to cooking with 2-week-old turkey says a lot about her. She put the turkey and a half can of mushroom soup into the pot. Then she began rummaging around in the refrigerator. She found some leftover broccoli and added that. A few carrots went in, and then a half carton of sour cream. In a hurry, as usual, she added green beans and cranberry sauce. And then somehow, half an apple pie slipped into the dish. Mom looked momentarily horrified. Then she shrugged and said, "Who knows? Maybe it'll be good." And she began throwing everything in the refrigerator in along with it. Leftover pate, some cheese ends, a few squishy tomatoes. That night, I set up camp in the dining room. I was particularly worried about the big eaters, and I stared at my favorite people as they approached the buffet, willing them away from the casserole. I actually stood directly in front of Bert Langner, so he couldn't reach the turkey disaster. I loved him, and I knew that he loved food. Unknowingly, I had started sorting people by their tastes. Like a hearing child born to deaf parents, I was shaped by my mother's handicap, discovering that food could be a way of making sense of the world. At first, I paid attention only to taste, storing away the knowledge that my father preferred salt to sugar and my mother had a sweet tooth. Later, I also began to note how people ate and where. My brother liked fancy food and fine surroundings. My father only cared about the company, and Mom would eat anything so long as the location was exotic. I was slowly discovering that if you watched people as they ate, you could find out who they were. Then I began listening to the way people talked about food, looking for clues to their personalities. "What is she really saying?" I asked myself when Mom bragged about the invention of her famous corned beef ham. "I was giving a party," she'd begin, "and as usual, I left everything for the last minute." Here she'd look at her audience, laughing softly at herself. I asked Ernst to do the shopping, but you know how absent-minded he is. Instead of picking up a ham, he brought me corned beef. She'd look pointedly at Dad, who would look properly sheepish. What could I do? Mom asked. I had people coming in a couple of hours. I had no choice. I simply pretended it was a ham. With that, Dad would look admiringly at my mother, pick up his carving knife, and start serving the masterpiece. Most mornings, I got out of bed and went to the refrigerator to see how my mother was feeling. You could tell instantly, just by opening the door. One day in 1960, I found a whole suckling pig staring at me. I jumped back and slammed the door, hard. Then I opened it again. I'd never seen a whole animal in our refrigerator before. Even the chickens came in parts. He was surrounded by tiny crab apples. Lady apples, my mother corrected me later, and a whole wreath of weird vegetables. This was not a bad sign. The more odd and interesting things there were in the refrigerator, the happier my mother was likely to be. Still, I was puzzled. The refrigerator in our small kitchen had been almost empty when I went to bed. Where did you get all this stuff? I asked. The stores aren't open yet. Mom patted at her crisp gray hair. Oh, I woke up early and decided to go for a walk. You'd be surprised what goes on in Manhattan at 4 a.m. I've been down to the Fulton Fish Market, and I found the most interesting produce store on Bleecker Street. It was open? Well, not really, but I saw someone moving around, so I knocked. I've been trying to get ideas for the party. Party? What party? Your brother has decided to get married, she said casually, as if I should have somehow intuited this in my sleep. And of course we're going to have a party to celebrate the engagement and meet Shelley's family. My brother, I knew, would not welcome this news. He was 13 years older than I, and considered it a minor miracle to have reached the age of 25. I don't know how I survived her cooking. She's a menace to society, he said, as he was telling me about the years when he and Mom were living alone, after she had divorced his father and was waiting to meet mine. Bob went to live with his father in Pittsburgh right after I was born, but he always came home for holidays. When he was there, he always helped me protect the guests, using tact to keep them from eating the more dangerous items. I took a more direct approach. Don't eat that, I ordered my best friend Jeannie as her spoon dipped into one of Mom's more creative lunch dishes. My mother believed in celebrating every holiday. In honor of St. Patrick, she was serving bananas with green sour cream. I don't mind the color, said Jeannie, a trusting soul whose own mother wouldn't dream of offering you an all-orange Halloween extravaganza complete with milk dyed the color of orange juice. Jeannie's mother served the sort of perfect lunches that I longed for. Neat squares of cream cheese and jelly on white bread, bologna sandwiches, Chef Boyardee straight from the can. It's not just food coloring, I said. The sour cream was green to begin with. The carton's been in the refrigerator for months. Jeannie quickly put her spoon down, and when Mom went into the other room to answer the phone, we ducked into the bathroom and flushed our lunches down the toilet. That was great, Mim, said Jeannie, when Mom returned. May we be excused, is all I said. I wanted to get away from the table before anything else appeared. Don't you want dessert? Mom asked. Sure, said Jeannie. No, I said. But Mom had already gone to get the cookies. She returned with some strange black lumps on a plate. Jeannie looked at them dubiously, then politely picked one up. I reached for one myself. Oh, go ahead, eat it. They're just Girl Scout mint cookies. She left them on the radiator so all the chocolate melted off, but they won't kill you.